Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mind Your Subconscious podcast. I haven't said that in a long time, I know. I have decided to start back up this podcast because within the next few months, I'm going to have incredible conversations with people about the subconscious, about hypnosis and everything. And so I really would love to share them with you on this platform. So thank you if you have come back to this podcast or if you're still listening. Thank you so much for being here. And today we start off our conversation with Danny Snow. Danny is a forensic hypnotist, and he has been that for decades already. But because forensic hypnosis has not been approved anymore to be a tool that is eligible to be used in court, because we can influence people so much with hypnosis, this tool is not eligible in court. And that's why Danny invented his own technique to be able to do something that is very similar to forensic hypnosis to help people in court. And so Danny is also a war veteran, and he is a wealth of knowledge. So this conversation was incredible. Also, he knows a psychic, and he has her help him with cases as well. And she speaks to different kinds of spirits and people in the psychic realm, and has helped solve court cases as well. So this is going to be an incredibly interesting conversation. And it was part of my spiritual hypnosis training, because in there I bring experts to my students so that they can learn from a lot of different kinds of hypnosis people, hypnotists, hypnotherapists, and spiritual people, so that they can use all the tools that are out there, and so that they have a comprehensive knowledge of everything that is out there to help people. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you will stick around for the podcast. I look forward to bringing this up again and sending you so much love. Let's get into the conversation now.
Hello, everybody. I'm here today with Danny Snow. And Danny, tell us, what is it that you actually do, and what does it have to do with hypnosis, or what you used to do?
Well, I call myself a forensic hypnotist, but I've changed the definition of forensic hypnosis because the science didn't back up what hypnosis was claiming. So we had to evolve a little bit, which is a good thing. The court system in America is changing so that if you hypnotize a witness or a victim, the other side, the opposing counsel, is going to destroy them on the stand, and they're going to destroy your credibility. So you can't hypnotize victims and witnesses anymore. I'm the operations manager for a law firm, but we're slowly spinning it down because she went back to prosecuting. She got a wonderful offer. She was a prosecutor, state of Oklahoma prosecutor of the year quality. And over 10,000 cases. And so we're spinning her law thing down, and I'm going back to doing what I was doing, which is what I call forensic hypnosis.
And tell us why the court doesn't, or like people would destroy the other side for hypnotizing a victim. Why is that?
The science isn't there. There's a thing called the Daubert standard, which is basically, it's a common sense standard where you've got to have evidence supporting what you're doing. Well, the problem with hypnosis, forensic hypnosis, like I go in and I hypnotize a victim. Well, they're highly suggestible. And so if I say, Joe Smith murdered your family, they're going to believe Joe Smith murdered their family, even if the guy didn't have anything to do with it. And we can, you want to go kind of get, you want a quick example of this on how it really worked and how we misinterpreted it? Okay. Ted Bundy, huge serial killer. He went into the Chi Omega house, killed a couple of young girls. Okay. Another girl watched him come down the staircase. All right. They snatch her up. they have a forensic hypnotist who works for the police department hypnotizer. At this point in time, the police are convinced it was the Mexican gardener. And they said, okay, it was the Mexican gardener that killed all these girls. And she's like, no, I never saw this guy. No. It was the Mexican gardener. And so they went at her for like 3 or 4 hours. And she never came off. It wasn't the Mexican gardener. So the police department's all mad at her. A couple days later, she's looking in the paper and she sees this guy arrested for murder, Ted Bundy. And she calls up the detectives. That's the guy that walked down the stairs. Okay, so now Ted Bundy's his own lawyer for part of this. And so they have this, they bring her in as the witness. And he finds out that she's been hypnotized. Okay, well, the judge is going to throw it out. But then the judge gets to looking at the transcript, and the forensic hypnotist was beating up on her. It was the Mexican gardener. And she kept going, no, it was this other guy. And that's how forensic hypnosis got twisted up into the lore of Ted Bundy, you know? So if you've got an agenda and the police, you know, they believed it was the Mexican gardener, it just goes sideways. And the other side knows this now. And so if I go into court and testify, they're going to have a forensic psychiatrist come in and testify against me. And no matter how perfect my, you know, there's four standards, you know, FBI, DOJ, the federal, the old federal, the new federal, they can shoot holes in all four of those standards. And there's actually a fifth standard with the forensic hypnotist bunch. But the book's $800, and I don't think anybody bought the book because there's only like, last time I looked, the forensic hypnotist bunch only had 32 people. So, you know, but it's failed as a science because people are suggestible. That's why hypnosis is so good in hypnotherapy, because you can suggest your way, you know, to help them be better. But in the hands of a guy with an agenda, it's a disaster.
That is sad, actually. Like, and it's, to me, it seems like it was more brainwashing as like hypnosis with, you know, if you're a good person and if you do hypnosis right, you absolutely, I think you can get a victim to remember certain things that they would not remember under other circumstances, right?
Yeah, if you can relax them, but that's part of the cognitive interview process. You relax them, you know. And that's why cognitive interview, you get 42% of the possible information you could get out of a victim. Hypnosis gets 39%, but you can shade them and mess things up. And then a standard police interview is 29%. So if the cops ever bring you into a situation, you're going to shine, but just don't do hypnosis. You know,
Call it something else and then, you know, almost do it.
All you got to do is get them to relax, drink water. And that's what they taught us in interrogation school. You know, just get, you know, a little bit of relaxation goes a long way.
Yeah. And so how come you then developed your own methodology?
Well, okay. My friends in the hypnosis world call me the hypnoscientist, because I have to figure things out and prove things. They say I'm just like Richard Nongard. And Richard Nongard was actually from Tulsa. And I've been in so many rooms and they go, Richard Nongard just left. You should have met him. And I'm like, what the heck? But and this has been going on for years. You know, I guarantee if I walk into the gas station, somebody say, well, Richard Nongard was just here. You missed him. But anyway, I like to see the science. And when I was going to be a forensic hypnotist, I said, okay, there's four methods. What do they all have in common? And what's the science behind them? Because I want to get it right. There's no science, you know, limited. It was old limited back in the 60s and 70s, you know, but that was it, man. It was scary. And the brain doesn't even work that way. You know, people say the brain, and hypnotists are the worst. They say the brain is like a tape recorder. You can remember everything. No, you could take out half the wall of a building. People are so used to seeing that wall, their bias messes it up, you know? So, yeah, does that answer your question?
Yes, that answered the question. And so take us through the process. Like, let's say you have a victim that you need to do this cognitive interview.
Interviewing, yeah.
Interviewing, cognitive
Yeah.
interviewing with. So what is the process? You said you're going to relax them first, right?
Yeah. Okay. I really developed this really well when I was in Iraq. I was a combat engineer officer, but when they found out that I was a private investigator and I could do hypnosis, they started talking to me. And next thing, well, I got lucky on a big case. I mean, a big thing. Real lucky. And the next thing you know, my job is to interview everybody that's come off a convoy that's been attacked. And so I can't do 300 inductions in hypnosis sessions because people got things to do, and we're in a combat zone. One artillery shell and that blows up your whole session, literally. But anyway, so cognitive interviewing, I'd read up about it, and so you get them to relax. Most people, if they've been in a traumatic event, they're thirsty like there's no tomorrow. I mean, it's the most incredible thirst. I've been there. All your blood pools to your heart, your mouth is like cotton, and you have trouble seeing because everything is pulling in. So what you have to do is get that person to relax, drink water, and calm them down. And then you start off with, well, tell me about how the convoy started. When did you realize you were in trouble? What did you see? SILS, stop, look, listen, smell, and you bring them through that, which is this is all hypnosis stuff. And so everything we do, it fits. We just don't do an induction. We just, how did you feel about this? What did you see? What did you smell? And that's kind of what I do.
Okay, and so if you don't do the induction, how do you get them to relax? Like specifically, like do you ask questions?
Oh yeah.
Yes, you bring them water, but what are the kinds of questions, if you don't mind me asking, like what are the kinds
Oh
of
yeah.
questions that you would ask?
You went to Germany. What's the weather like in Germany? How was it? You're doing, I don't know if you guys are familiar with NLP,
Yeah.
how you feel, how you, it's all kinetic.
Building rapport, like building trust with another
Yeah,
person, right?
yeah. And
Yeah.
I'm watching how you hold your hands. Like I'm visual. My hands are up here. If I'm auditory, I don't think you can see my hands. And if I'm kinesthetic, they're way down here. I'm watching all this. So I'm going to say to a kinesthetic guy, well, how did you feel? Was the truck running okay? And I'm just going to put them back into that situation again. What was it like when the ground shook when the explosion happened? They'll tell you. What was the first thing you seen? Did you hear yelling before the explosion? Stuff like that.
So you pay very close attention to the words, to the gestures, to the movements, to everything that the person is doing, right?
Body language is huge. I'm going to give you this little packet that I've put together. And it's all the books in my library that I use for stuff. And body, like Chase Hughes, Ellipsis, huge in my universe. I spent a week with him and Rich Guzzi together, which was kind of a combination. Because you got two, one of them was an old Navy chief and the other one is Rich Guzzi, and they're crazy. But yeah, a lot of micro expressions when people are being deceitful. I learned all that, all sorts of stuff. It's this is a you gotta always be learning something new.
Yeah, because also like humans as humans, they're like we don't even know everything that we can do or that we do, or not everything is analyzed. Like you said, there was no science really for the hypnosis or for anything even. And why do you think that nobody chose to rectify what you can do with hypnosis? Or why do you think there's no more science to support anything that you can do with hypnosis? Why was that just left alone with the Ted Bundy case and just said, okay, that's how it
Okay,
is?
forensic hypnosis, that became like a dead subject because it was just there was they couldn't it was two people were too suggestive. Sports hypnosis, whole different field. Military, big into sports hypnosis. West Point, all of the academies are teaching sports hypnosis, mental resiliency. That's now standard for everybody going through military training. And
Yes. So it was just forensic hypnosis dying, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
The science, it's just, it's there. People are open to suggestions. I've had cops come to me and say, I need the victim to remember this tag number. You can't do that because that everything goes out the window at that point. You know,
yeah.
Think of a Mexican gardener, you know, he had nothing to do with this crime. They were going to pin him with 3 murders. So, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Okay. And when it comes to solving cases, you also told me that you work together with psychics, right? Or
yes.
She calls herself something else. Like, what does
she
call herself?
She called herself a messenger.
A messenger.
And
exactly.
And if I call her a psychic, she freaks out on me.
Okay. Okay.
But her grandmother was a big, big time psychic in Alabama and Georgia back in the 30s and 40s. I mean, big time. Okay. It skipped a generation, went to her. She didn't like what was going on. She shut it off. One day she's driving home from work and she's in a head-on collision at about 65 miles an hour one way, 55 on the other way. As they're pulling her out of the car, she dies. And she's dead for 2 or 3 minutes. And the paramedics were able to bring her back. She spent a couple of, I think she was in a coma for like a week, maybe 2 weeks. And when she came back, they had to reteach her to speak. She took a pretty good brain injury. Later on, this is where it gets kind of creepy, but she goes into her doctor's office. He's a neurosurgeon and says, I'm scratching myself up and hitting myself at night. I don't know what's causing this. I mean, she's got like a black eye. She is scratched up like big time. And the neurosurgeon sent her to a psychologist. Psychologist says, I don't know what's going on. We need a forensic hypnotist. Well, her boyfriend at the time was one of my best friends from the Wounded Warrior program in the Army. And so I told her, look, put on a really good nightgown, because we're going to videotape you tonight while you're asleep. And so we videotaped her and I watched her get beat up. I mean, you couldn't see a fist hit her, but you could see her body react to it. And I was like, what the heck? So, you know, the scariest video I ever seen, I deleted it and I wish I hadn't, because every day I wish I had kept that. But anyway, and she's got 2 black eyes at this point. I mean, scratched up bad. And I put her into hypnosis, which we don't do anymore because that opens her up to everything. We put her into hypnosis. Yeah, really. And the guy gave us his name and said, I'm trying to get a message to my son. My will is in a red Bible. It's in the basement and it's in a box against the wall. And so I figure out where this guy works or where he lives. We call this guy and said, hey, look, you don't know what it means, but we got a message for you. The will, and we tell him where the will is. He goes, holy cow, I've been looking for that will. He runs downstairs, comes back up a couple minutes later. I got the will. I got the will. Thank you so much. What do I owe you? And we're like, oh, we don't need money. You know. And so that was one of the cases she worked on with me. And after that, she would call me every time she took a beating. And a book and wall or a on a bookcase with a letter to a woman's sister saying how much she loved her, and she never got a chance to deliver the letter, and she wanted her sister to have the letter, and you know, she took a good beating on that one.
So are the beatings what she has to endure to so that she gets messages? Or
sometimes somebody really wants to get a hold of her, she takes a beating. Yeah. And then she'll call me going, Danny, we got to talk, you know, like, and she'll send me a picture of her face and, you know, she's got a bruise or a cut or something. She got mangled one time. And I mean, she got beat up. And, I use her on my murder cases when I get them. And we just did a double murder up in Kansas. And, you know, the question we got asked by the family is, who all was involved in this murder? Because they already had one guy arrested. but it was the guy's girlfriend that we were after. And it's quite a, it's a story, but I've done 327 investigations total. 13 of those were murders. I solved all 13. I'm looking at doing four more because we got to wait till the grass dies down here before we can get the cadaver dog out. 28 runaways, 18 parental child abductions, 147 divorces, 55 miscellaneous cases. And for court, we've had 79 wins in a row. And that's by using hypnosis to tell a better story, to relate to the jury, to look at the jury, to profile the jury. And this is all stuff that I'm sending you how to do.
So, amazing. So yeah. How do you do that then? How would you get a person to get that, to tell a better story with hypnosis? Are you talking about hypnosis or are you not talking about?
Hypnosis is about metaphors.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're talking to a jury, are you going to talk up high? Or are you going to talk down friendly to them? Like, hey, you know, like yesterday's case, I had nothing to do with this, but yeah, because I was doing homework. But anyway, pedophile attacked a 8-year-old girl. And my lawyer that I work with, Jenna, you know, she tells the story and she puts the little girl on the stand and it's guy got 20 years. The jury was out for 20 minutes. It was just like, you're guilty, dude. And that was it. But it's relatable to the, because if you talk up too high, if you talk too technical to the jury, you'll lose them every time. But if you're like, hey, now this is what happened, you know, it's a lot. And this is the beauty of hypnosis. We tell stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we use metaphors and the things that we've learned or that I've learned or that we've learned in the training as well, like with metaphors to use or even like when you hypnotize children or something, you know, you just tell a story and they will understand, their subconscious mind will understand. And I think that's also very powerful to use when you are in court. Just do you do that? Like do you put something in their subconscious or?
No. They got to tell their story their way.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. If you put something in their subconscious, their eyes will be like over here and it'll be obvious that something's going on. Now, the cool thing about witnesses, up until they're about 17, they'll actually tell you what they saw and without any bias. After 17, boom, they got bias big time. Same way with, you know, you can put a kid into hypnosis like that, you know, but, you know, and that's why the, you know, comedy hypnosis is always at the college and high school level. Those guys are already in hypnosis, you know, like imagine, pretend. What I use is imagine, pretend, and just think about to put people into hypnosis. And one of my friends ripped it off big time and he uses it for all of his shows now.
Oh, so. Amazing. Okay. And what would you say for you is like the most powerful thing that you do in, you can pick anything that you do, like court cases, like in any court case, what is the most powerful thing that you have found that you would share with our students?
Okay, on court cases, it's the jury selection or voir dire. When we get a list of all the potential jurors, the first thing I do is run them through voter registration. I want to know if they're Democrats or Republicans. Democrats are soft on crime. Republicans are hard on crime. Then I'm going to look where they live. Nice house, rent house, whatever. Okay. People with nicer houses tend to be more law and order to a point if they're Republican. If they're Democrat, they tend to go like Black Lives Matter, liberal, you know. So in depending on what side of the fence you are, you want those people or you don't want people. We screen for teachers because teachers are terrible on juries. I mean, you want to crash a jury fast, put a teacher on there. It's insane. I mean, they're bad. and then we go through their social media to see what they're posting about. If they're posting about guns or whatever and whatever, you know, they're conservatives. And we're just trying to figure out. Now, the other thing we do is we run their background. to see what kind of criminal. Now, you can't be a felon and serve on a jury, but every now and then one of those guys will get through. So that's an automatic out. We're looking for people with impulse control issues, like 13 speeding tickets, okay? Or they got an assault and a battery, you know, they lost their cool, because you can manipulate that person just by saying the right words to get them to follow you to the ends of the earth and help you win your case, you know? And the people that we strike, and depending on what size of jury, you know, it's either one or two or three or four or whatever, but you can get rid of those people that you don't want as your profile. So, or in, you know, because you have like, if you're trying to put somebody in jail, you want right-wing, conservative Republicans that post about the American flag, you know, and they drive the pickup truck. So that's what your, you know, that's what your jury profile is. I'm actually talking to a marketing company. I'm trying to weasel my way into them, but they do nothing but high-profile juries all across the U.S. Same techniques, you know.
Wow, interesting. And when it comes to hypnosis, what would you say is the most powerful thing that you have learned and that you want to share?
Okay, I went through Dr. Reese's sports hypnosis seminar, and it was like 5 days of high intense training. And you can take a soccer guy and just make him a phenomenal guy, you know. In sports, the reason I'm doing forensic is because there's an adrenaline rush. Trying to solve the case, you got deadlines, you got, it feeds my ego. But if I was going to do it all over, I would have been hard into sports, because sports, man, there's money everywhere. Individual players want to get better. I actually met the psychologist that did Tiger Woods, because Tiger Woods is big into hypnosis. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Kevin Costner. I mean, a lot of those guys are into hypnosis. So I would have been sports hypnosis. It just teaches you how to win better.
Okay. And how would you hypnotize somebody to win better?
Okay. Let's say I'm working with a football player and he's okay. And let me draw back. I'm working with a soccer player, because I think you guys play soccer, because I don't know anything about football really. But okay, so you're playing soccer. And what you want that soccer player to believe is that his grandmother's soul is in that ball, and he's got to get that ball to the goal, and that's where heaven is. And he wants to get his grandma to heaven. I would do something like that.
Oh, wow. That is some very interesting imagery.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You're trying to save your grandma. Everybody, boom, they're all in. I mean, they're crazy about it.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, and I used to train people for gunfighting and stuff in the Army. And I worked with a lot of different law enforcement bunches. And it's be aware, take care of your people, watch your corners. And we taught them all that. So it's the same thing.
Okay. And having been in, like, have you've been to Iraq, or, right?
Yeah, twice.
Like, you've actually been there. So
yeah.
With everything that you, I'm assuming that you must have seen, is there anything, like, you know, was there any traumatic scenes that you have seen, or did you use hypnosis to help you with that, or was there nothing that you actually saw because you were just working behind the scenes, kind of?
Okay, I was a combat engineer, and our job is to build stuff or blow stuff up, and we clear routes and stuff like that. Well, in one of my convoys, I actually lost the first soldier that Oklahoma lost to an IED. His name was Kyle Brindley. He was like 21 years old, and that was pretty traumatic, because I'm trying, you know, he goes down in the kill zone, we got to go back to get him. He's hit in the back of the neck. And when I had my first sergeant run over and say, you know, tell me where he's hit so I can report it for the medevac. And he's like, back here. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be bad. But anyway, he died shortly after we got into the hospital. I don't really use hypnosis on that. I have talked to my friends who used hypnosis on a couple of those guys that were in the convoy with us. But for the most part, I need that edge so I can stay sharp. And if I dull that pain, then I'm not on point, you know, like I should be. And I've had a lot of close calls. I mean, you know, like crazy stuff. My soldiers used to pat me on the back so that they would get good luck before a mission. That's how many close calls I had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Danny. This was amazing. This was incredible. And I also heard that you have something that you want to share with our students, like a list that you put together. Can you can you tell us a little bit more about that list?
Yeah, it's I call it forensic hypnosis information. And at the very first page is my emergency contact information. One day somebody's going to run into your office and say, we got a crime victim, a child's been abducted. We need to get all the information out of them we can, and you're a hypnotist. And I put my phone number in there, and there's a time difference between us. So you need to call me or text me 911 like four times. And that'll wake me up because it goes through, you know, at four times.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll talk you through the process. If we can do Zoom through the process, I'll work with you, you know, because nobody wants to lose a kid. And so I'll do whatever I can to help you on my end. So, and I'll, you know, I've got some instructions in there because most people, when they've been through a traumatic event, like I said, all the water pools in their chest because it's, you know, freeze, fight or flight. And you've got to get them to relax a little bit so you can get information out of them. So, oh, wow. And then I've got all the reference books I use. Let's see here. Crimes and litigation stuff, cognitive interview. I touched on it a little bit because we're actually putting a course together and I want to give you guys the best information. So whenever I get it put together, I'll pop you with a copy. And divorce coaching would be great for you guys. There's money to be made in divorce coaching. And we're actually got another class that we're putting together on divorce coaching. And we'll probably put it on Udemy to make it, you know, make it $9 a class or whatever. And hope to sell a bunch of them.
Amazing.
Yeah, just body language, interrogation, death investigations, a little bit of executive protection, because I used to do that a long time ago. And it's a really good book. And then the pocket guide for like herbs and stuff that I use, rocks and stuff. Because every now and then you'll see something that's out of place and you're like, did the killer bring that in? Or how did it get here? You know, but yeah, stuff like that. And I'll send it to you.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm sure our students will love that.
Yeah. And okay. If they got any questions, just, you know, give them my contact information or whatever, and I'll feel free to, you know, help them.
Awesome. I will do that. I will do that, definitely. So thank you so much, Danny.
Love this episode of Mind Your Subconscious? Subscribe, rate, and leave a review on whichever platform you're listening. It's very much appreciated. Thank you so much.